We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Download the Odyssey app, favorite 95.7 The Game. You'll get breaking news updates as well as links to the very top interviews we do, the best moments on The Game, powered by DuckDuckGo, privacy simplified. Well, a huge day of... Here it is. I'm going to do it.
Maximum!
We'll continue.
I won't let you kill me with that.
I don't do it just to bother you.
Yes, you do.
No, the kids love it, Ray. You got to trust me on that one.
Name one.
Griffin.
Thank you. I rest my case.
Griffin goes nuts for that. I tell them, turn on the radio at 2 o'clock at preschool every day just so you can hear Maximum Football.
I want video of that.
the people who you dismiss at all times on the text line loves it, Ray, and the text line doesn't like much. So it's working on some levels. Well, don't make me do it again.
Maximum!
We'll get back to it when Cam Inman joins us. We will get right back into our Maximum Football coverage this afternoon in about 10, 15 minutes from right now. But I didn't even think the Warriors were really going to make the show today, but here they are. Anthony Slater has just tweeted out that the Warriors have given us an update on James Wiseman, who is recovering from meniscus surgery. He is only going to participate in controlled individual portions of training camp and is expected to begin full jumping around October 15th, which is only 4 days before the opener. So it's clear that James Wiseman is going to miss the start of the season. Now, you also told me, Lucas, that we had news on Klay Thompson, but that is just James Wiseman. Is there any news on Klay Thompson included in this?
Not in that tweet.
Not in that tweet I'm looking at.
No, I do have it, if you would like it. It's from the Warriors PR. They put it out. Would you like me to read it to you?
Well, yeah, considering you didn't send it to me, that's the way we got to do it.
Warriors guard Klay Thompson, who missed the last two seasons due to a torn left ACL and torn right Achilles, has made good progress during his rehab over the course of the summer and is on pace to return for the 2021-2022 season. The exact timing for his return this season will be based on his continued progress. Thompson, who underwent surgery...
Stop it. There is no update. So there's no new news on Klay Thompson whatsoever, but there was a little news on James Wiseman.
News is a strong word for
Klay
that.
Is expected to participate in various controlled drills during training camp. His return to full practice will be determined at a later date.
Yeah, I could have told you that without that.
Yeah, and I don't know about Wiseman missing the season opener. I understand why that's the conclusion Anthony's drawing, but I'm not even sure we can reliably say that at this point. And if he's returning to full participation a couple days before the season starts, then, you know, maybe he'll miss the first two, but he should be available early in the season. I will say this. We talked about what they might do with the various open roster spots. We liked the Porter and Bielitsa signings, you know, for what they were. Minimum deals, not bad, good value. I like a couple of the names they're looking at in the guards for the 15th spot, but it seems clear guard is the direction they want to go. If James Wiseman is not available, let me read to you the depth chart for the Golden State Warriors at the center position.
Kevon Looney.
That's the whole depth chart. I mean, I guess the next men up are Draymond Green, Nemanja Bjelica, Juan Toscano-Anderson playing small ball center again. James Wiseman is kind of the only legitimate center on this roster right now. Because yeah. Looney, I love Looney, and I love playing him at center, and I think he was going to be the starter regardless, but he's like 6'9", 6'10". They don't have any other legit centers. It's why I'm surprised that they didn't give a real center a look with this 15th roster spot.
Well, this brings us to Gasol, does it not? Because it looks like that name is sort of being bandied about, that Mark Gasol could possibly show up and be the answer for the Warriors, even though he wasn't much of an answer when he played last year.
Well, Marc Gasol's an interesting case, right? Because he was at his best as a low post, bash you under the rim and dunk on you.
Grit and grind
center. And defensive player of the year candidate on a couple of occasions. He's physically not capable of being that guy anymore. He did shoot 41% from three last year. And over the last 3 years combined, he's like a high 38% three-point shooter. And he's still one big body if you put him down low. He'll help you on the boards. He'll help protect the rim to a degree. He's not nearly as versatile as he was in his youth, but he's good.
Shot-altering big.
Yeah. I think that'd be great. Is he worth more than 18 to 20 minutes a game? Absolutely not. But would he be helpful in that 18 to 20, especially if Wiseman's not available? Yes. Would he be helpful as a mentor to a guy like James Wiseman? I'd certainly think so. That's exactly the kind of name that, you know, much as I love the Arch of Dimes, Ryan Arcidiacono, and I would advocate him for the 15th spot, if it's Marc Gasol, that's a better fit to me. They need a big guy.
The only question I would have is that a better fit for Marc Gasol? Because what you're describing may not fit his desires. And he might just go, I don't think I'm going to go there.
Why do you think it might not fit his desires?
He might not want to be a mentor. He might not want to play 18 minutes a game. I mean, he might have an irrational view of his own importance. I mean, I can't speak to that. But he might just decide, nah, I'm not ready to be the 18-minute-a-game guy who suddenly becomes a 12-minute-a-game guy when Wiseman's ready to go. He might just go, I don't want to be the 15th guy.
And he might rather be in Spain, as Lucas said in my ear. Like, maybe yeah. If he's going to be a 15-minute-a-game guy, maybe he'd rather go home to Spain. But if he wants to play for a reasonable contender, he's not getting more than 20 minutes a game from any of those. And I don't think the Lakers clearly are not interested. I don't think the Nets would be interested. So the Warriors might be as good a contender as would be interested in him.
The other little story about the Warriors today is I guess it was Monty Poole put forward the whole, like, so if Andrew Wiggins isn't going to get tested or vaccinated. He's not going to be able to play. He's going to get vaccinated. He probably already has been, to be honest with you. There is no... I'm not getting vaccinated because I got principals, who then gets bought off by the threat of their paycheck, who then trumps how proud they are of the how proud they are of their vaccination. It's usually that guy just stops talking and the proof will be in the pudding. And yeah, when you inconvenience someone to the tune of $30 million game check, well, that's not per game, obviously, but
it's $360,000 per game. So that's a big
chunk of change.
That game checks more than I'll ever make in a year.
Yeah.
And here's the thing that I think I don't sell yourself short. I don't want to go this far to impugn Andrew Wiggins. I can understand some vaccine hesitancy. When he was actually asked about this was a long time ago. And what he said was, I probably won't do that unless I'm forced to. This is being forced to.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't think there's even any reason to necessarily believe he was all that reticent when he found out that he would have to get vaccinated to play. He was not like a, I refuse to get vaccinated, I'm still doing research, this is important to me guy. He was like a, nah, doesn't sound like it's for me, but I haven't thought that much about it sort of a guy.
Well, now he gets to think about it.
That's right.
If he hasn't already thought about it.
I would almost guarantee he has and that he's vaccinated. Even just from the Warriors' perspective, the moment they knew anyone who's not vaccinated can't play at Chase, if he wasn't already vaccinated at that point, I guarantee Joe Lacob and Steve Kerr and Bob Myers were on that behind getting him vaccinated.
And the other thing was, if I remember the timeline, when he said he had not gotten vaccinated, this was before Delta had started to pick up steam.
Correct.
So there is a whole different set of information.
It was March.
Yeah, there's a whole different set of data here that very well might have convinced him, you know what? The odds have changed. Pure and simple. The odds have changed. Because a vaccine is only a percentage play anyway. It's not a cure, but what it does is it very much limits your chances of getting it. And it limits the severity of what happens if you do get it.
And location, location, location matters an awful lot. And there is no state in the union that has got a better arms wrapped around this virus than us, the largest, most populous state in the union, which probably suggests when people aren't screaming a-holes, it's an awful lot easier to get your arms around this issue. Thank you very, very much. There is your public service announcement for the day. In the meantime, Cam Inman is right around the corner. We talk to him next. Is your business, your high-rise, your HOA in need of quality painting that teams are returning to offices now? Well, MB Jesse Painting offers the most trusted painting services in the Bay Area, and they complete projects on time. Get a free quote today at the Bay Area's Painting Experts, MBJESSEE.com, mbjesse.com. Cam Inman next, Damon Ratto and Kolsky, 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
We're about to bring Cam Inman in for his trip to Philadelphia report card. A very, very odd game, to say the least. It featured a day of offensive struggle, yet two 90-yard touchdown drives in the same game, which the Niners haven't done in 29 years. It featured a day where Jimmy was Mr. Quarterback sneak, career high carries. Oh, so you're running with a quarterback, but Trey Lance didn't play a single down. It was a week where Ayuk was supposed to get off the schneid. I'm guessing did a little, but was still hardly used as a target. It was a week where it felt like George Kittle should be involved an awful lot. He wasn't. Oh, and every single guy who played running back pretty much today is licking his wounds. What a weird, weird, weird day of football that leaves the Niners 2-0, but with a pretty decent amount of anxiety running through the fan base. And to talk about that, we bring in a man who doesn't karaoke often, but when he does.
I've never had intro music. There's only one song, if I do karaoke, which I've maybe done twice in my life, it was Eddie Grant's Electric Avenue.
We're gonna rock down to Electric Avenue, and then we take it higher.
My goodness, damn near perfect. He's a lot of fun to talk to.
Electric Avenue.
Now,
Here's 49ers insider Cam Inman.
Cam, glad you're back from a very long road trip for you and all the riders. You're finally back at home. We appreciate you slipping on into the show today. Thanks, as always, for your time. Let's just hop right into it. Was yesterday a good win, a weird win, or it doesn't matter because it's just a win?
I think it was actually a good win that they were tested pretty well, especially like kind of, you know, the early struggle, so it wasn't easy, and then you could kind of see how they responded to the adversity, and everybody was destroying Garoppolo and the offense for those first few three and outs, and then they kind of found their rhythm, and it's just I thought that was pretty good. I mean, the defense really answered the call so well, especially with that goal line stand, that it's not going to be a blowout, but it's a hard-fought win against somebody that was having their home opener with a lot of fans, just so excited to be back in the stadium for the first time in over a year. So I think it's a good win. I mean, if you want a 42-0 shutout, then you're going to say, oh, well, that was too easy. Bring on a real challenge. That was a challenge, and so I think you needed that before you bring the Green Bay Packers in on primetime Sunday night.
So other than a sort of very cynical, for lack of a better word, sort of performance in which they did just enough to win, just often enough to win, what conclusions, if any, can you draw about this team other than the fact that it defends pretty well?
Yeah, well, those are good questions, Ray, because it doesn't seem like the offense is quite in sync yet, other than I will say the offensive line looks really good. I will say Nick Bosa surprised me by how often he's playing. He's playing a big workload for a guy coming off an ACL, and he looks pretty darn good with his range of motion, obviously, his skill set. And then they're kind of finding their way. You know, I go back to the 2019 season when they opened that Super Bowl run with back-to-back road wins, and I don't quite get that same feel with this team. But I think this team might have a little bit even more cohesion because they've been around each other for a little bit longer. They're going to have to fight through things maybe that 2019 team didn't, because 2019 they opened 8-0, and sure they could try to do that this year, but they got a few tough ones the next 2 weeks. I think it's a little too early to jump in conclusions on what this team is. Other than I will say Jimmy Garoppolo. For everything he's been through this year, and it's amazing to me how people can interpret it two different ways. It's half glass or glass half full or half empty. And I thought Garoppolo was half full yesterday, the way he like responded after starting in a 6-of-12 funk, and then he finished like 14-of-16. And I know he's not throwing deep, but when you're looking at Jimmy Garoppolo as a quarterback, it's these three words: it's read, step, throw. I mean, it's going to come out quick. And it's going to be where it needs to be most of the time. And the fact that he has no interceptions through two games, I think that's really big.
Doesn't it feel like we're setting the bar a little bit low for the quarterback of a team that's expected to be a Super Bowl contender if just not throwing any interceptions through 2 weeks is the bar? And look, I understand they won. But I guess what I'm wondering is, if you don't trust your starter to throw it more than 7 yards in the air, why is he your starter?
Well, that's how the offense is set up. And Jimmy Garoppolo is best when he's throwing quick passes. And that's kind of like when I interviewed Drew Brees a few weeks ago, he said that's something that Jimmy Garoppolo took away from watching a lot of Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers film, was how to get the ball out quick. So are you going to get the ball out quick and throw it 60 yards downfield when you don't have a Olympic caliber sprinting wide receiver going after it? That's just the way this is set up. And remember, this is kind of was set up as a run-oriented offense. With all the running backs getting hurt the last 2 weeks, I'd be a little bit more curious if they're going to air it out a little bit more and see what Jimmy can do. And I think they have confidence in him. I mean, obviously, they didn't pull him out for Trey Lance one snap yesterday. So Kyle Shanahan's not displeased.
Cam Inman here on 95.7 The Game. Again, we don't want to make this all about Jimmy and what he isn't, but what I'm expecting is the every corner of Shanahan's playbook to materialize in a football game, and it feels like Jimmy is kept around because he can do the calculus that the rookie is unable to do. And yet it looks like Jimmy has got the bunny slope of offense handed to him, where it's one read throws, screens, slants, and out routes and comebacks, which if you were looking to integrate a young quarterback, you'd start with that. And it feels like Jimmy's end point would be Trey Lance's starting point.
Yeah, but they don't want to play the rookie right now. I mean, they don't need to play the rookie right now. And it's just, we get caught up in having to rush these young quarterbacks in. And if you have an established veteran that knows your scheme, so let me put it this way. At the end of that first half, on the really big pivotal offensive drive when they went 90-whatever yards after the goal line stand, they used clock management so well where you're going, wow, they haven't used any timeouts. What are they doing? Well, because Jimmy knew how to run the offense, knew how to run that four-minute drill. And if you go back at a training camp, and even like the practices at Levi's Stadium where fans were in, I believe the fans were in, but Jimmy executed that way better than Trey Lance could. And it's because he knows the system and what plays go where for the clock management. So, I mean,
all due respect,
that's how it looks to me, and it just Trey's not ready for that.
Right. It also looks to me like if you've had Madden as long as I have on PlayStation, you understand clock management, when to call timeouts, and that doesn't impress me. Like starting NFL quarterback, even backup NFL quarterback, should be well versed in all concepts of clock management.
Well, so what's your problem? They won the game. I don't quite understand what the whole hubbubaloo is.
I guess maybe this is, and problem isn't quite the right word, because you're right. They won the game, and in part they won the game because Jimmy Garoppolo made big throws and big sneak conversions when they needed them. So he wasn't terrible, not by any stretch. I guess the question is, it sure seems to me like you're going to need more from the quarterback position to score enough to beat the really good teams in this league. And if the attitude is, well, as long as we win, we're good, then that seems to me like you're grading exclusively on results that don't necessarily reflect the totality of the performance, and you're ultimately just waiting until you lose a few times to make a change, if in fact a change needs to be made. And that strikes me as a weird way to approach it from someone who is as high level a football thinker as Kyle Shanahan.
I think it's like you just said. I mean, it's about winning, and they go back to 2019 in the playoffs, and they won by running the ball, and it's all about, like, Kyle is so good as an offensive coach to figure out the mismatches. That's how he does it, and you know, they're not going to play really good defenses this season. If you look at their schedule, there's no, like, big powerhouse defense that's going to face them. I mean, Green Bay might be okay, but I don't think they're any good, honestly. The Bears have a decent defense, and they're going to be coming in a couple weeks, I believe. Seattle is not doing well, and the Niners themselves have the good defense. So then that reverts back to 2019, where you're the head coach, you have a really good defense, you have a great running back scheme, I'll say, that you hope every running back that doesn't get hurt can play in. And then you have veteran guys all throughout that offensive lineup now, with Kittle, Debo, Ayuk, Trent Sherfield, a really good offensive line, and Juszczyk, and it's set up in a way that it doesn't have to all be on this quarterback. And I think that's what everybody has to realize. Everybody wants a sexy toy and a Patrick Mahomes that can do everything and be the MVP, be a Tom Brady. Well, right now they have a winning quarterback, and that's always been Jimmy Garoppolo's motto when he's healthy, and right now he's healthy.
Based on the fact that Green Bay couldn't tackle any of the running backs that the Saints had a week ago,
right?
What do you need to see tonight against the Lions that would make you think that the 49ers would have to open their offense up next week?
Yeah, because, I mean, the Lions, it's interesting, the Lions have a decent running back, and they have a really good tight end, right? Wide receivers, not so much. And the Niners just played them, so they're going to be able to kind of, you know, maybe mirror themselves, see how that did. And, you know, defensively, whenever Green Bay comes in, it's everybody talks about their defensive line and how well they can be, what trouble they might be. And if that's the case, that's what I'd probably look more at, Ray, is just what kind of havoc can they cause there, where they clog the running lanes. Because Philly did a really good job of that, and Philly has a really good defensive line. Well, they did until Brandon Graham popped his Achilles when George Kittle threw him aside on a block. And then it kind of opened up for the Niners a little bit. So I would just say, as usual, just look at the line and see how they play.
So looking at the other side of the Niners and sort of the reverse of that, granted, the final stats on run defense don't look great because you gave up 82 yards on 10 carries to the quarterback. But in terms of running plays, I thought the line held up much better than it did against Detroit. And Javon Kinlaw played an awful lot of snaps for a guy coming off a bum knee. Did you get a sense of what the team felt like after Kinlaw's first performance? What were the reviews like of him?
I think everybody's actually really excited that he was able to block a field goal attempt and was able to jump up on that bad knee, right? And he blocked a field goal attempt, and he had some fun talking about it afterwards in the press conference. And he's very defiant, saying that he's healthy. But Shanahan and everybody has to be pretty cautious with him because they don't want to have a setback, because he is pretty good in there. DJ Jones is always an under-the-radar guy on the interior. He played well at Kentavious Street. So they did do better. Now, what I'll say also about the run defense is it's not there yet. And Fred Warner, you can see, knows that. Fred doesn't seem like he's been happy these first two games. He's the captain. He wants accountability. There were missed tackles out there. Al Shire had a couple missed tackles, made a couple plays too. But they have to find a way to replace Dre Greenlaw on that interior linebacker too, which is Aziz's spot. And so that's going to take an adjustment here, but that's kind of what football's all about.
Cam Inman, 95.7 The Game. Is Trenton Cannon the starting running back from here on out? I mean, like, obviously, we're waiting for Trey Sermon to clear concussion protocols, and maybe Mitchell's shoulder is better by game day, but we know that we're not going to be seeing, Raheem Mostert, obviously, Jamichael Hasty with a high ankle sprain. That's already being measured in weeks and time. They brought in Duke Johnson. They're going to work out Lamar Miller and TJ Yeldon. What is this team's solution at running back, considering they need a new one every six plays?
Well, I mean, when you first said Trenton, I thought we were going to be talking about something on my journey over the last 10 days.
Right.
So many different states. And I'm like, oh, did I go to New Jersey? I don't remember going to New Jersey. Well, right now, Elijah Mitchell's day-to-day with this shoulder stinger I think he had. So my guess is he'd still be the starter. Hasty's going to be out probably a month because of that high ankle sprain. And then you kind of just hope that somebody else they can plug in there. And they'll sign one of these guys that they're working out. I believe they're working out tomorrow. I don't know if they worked out today already. I just flew in actually about an hour ago. So we'll find out more as the week goes along. But they're gonna, whoever's back there, they're gonna go into a system that they're gonna have pretty darn good blockers in front of them. And my guess is it'll be Mitchell. I don't think it's anything too serious. But I am a little concerned just about Trey Sermon, because that was such a severe helmet-to-helmet hit he got, and just the aftermath of watching him on that grass face first there. That's harrowing. And, you know, the Niners, John York, their owner, Dr. John York, he's like the head of their the NFL's health and safety committee, I believe. And so anytime there's a concussion like this, I think they may take a little bit more cautious route, because Mosley missed, I believe, like 2.5 games last year with a concussion. So I can't imagine they'd rush Trey Sermon back from it. And it's not really their choice. It's got to go through independent consultations too.
How much, then, can you say, I know this about the 49ers that will remain true at least until week 9.
I know nothing about the 49ers. Because I can even maybe take that to week 10. No, I would say that they have a very capable offensive line, that they have a very threatening pass rush, and that they have underrated defensive backs with some veterans in Jimmy Ward and Jaquaski Tartt, and this rookie Diamador Lenore. He looks like he's going to be some fun to watch.
He's a player. That kid's a player.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with him, I mean, he grew up in L.A., and Richard Sherman's like buddy was like his coach, and he knew Sherman, and there's this background to him where he's got this confidence, where the resiliency that the cornerback's got to know, look, I may get burned, but they're going to do it on my terms, and I'll bounce back because I'm that good. And he has that, and that's why he leapt up the depth chart so well ahead of Ambry Thomas, their third-round pick.
And he did get burned, and he bounced back great yesterday, too. You mentioned Kittle and Ayuk being out there a lot. And I think we can put the doghouse thing to bed, given that Ayuk played a ton of snaps yesterday, but neither Kittle nor Ayuk is being targeted much. Do you see that as just the game plan, or are they not getting open? Is Garoppolo not seeing them? What do you account the lower usage for those guys compared to last year?
Yeah, I mean, Ayuk only had a six-yard catch yesterday. He had only two targets at him, so I don't know if he's totally out of the doghouse yet. He did get more action, started the game ahead of Trent Sherfield, so that's good. I think right now Garoppolo was like, Debo is so hot right now. He's got to look at Debo Samuel. He's the NFL's leading receiver in receiving yardage, and he's made a couple really big plays in each game. Kittle's making huge plays as a blocker, and as an all-pro tight end, he wants that all-encompassing aspect of tight endship, to be able to block somebody to the ground and laugh at him. And when the ball's thrown to him, he catches it. I mean, he caught all four of his targets that Jimmy threw at him. That's almost like on a need-to-do basis. Like, oh, I know I can go to George if I need to go to George, but there's Debo going across the middle wide open. I'm going to hit Debo for a play, and eventually I can look to my left, and, oh, there's a Juwan Jennings. Never seen him out here before. Let's throw him a touchdown. So that's, I think, they want to be unpredictable and not have everybody not have everybody looking at Kittle getting the ball. But, yeah, I mean, you would think Ayuk gets more action and Sherfield, and that's the one position right now where they are healthy at with targets, and they might need that against the Green Bay Packers if they don't have anybody to carry the ball.
If there weren't a couple personal fouls after back-to-back fumbles, I think this game goes much differently. Lenore knew exactly that Rager had stepped out of bounds. Had that, he not made himself ineligible, it's 10-0 Philadelphia right there. A 91-yard pass is involved in a non-scoring drive, right, which does not feel like it's the norm and at any level of football. So it was a good win. I also think they got away with a little football murder on that afternoon, but it doesn't matter as long as you get that win. The price of poker, I think, goes up against Aaron Rodgers next week if the Green Bay Packers get their feet underneath them tonight. So all eyes on that. Thank you very much. We appreciate all the checking in you did on, you know, from Detroit to West Virginia to Philadelphia. We always appreciate your time, Cam. Thanks very much.
Okay, guys. Thanks for having me. I'll talk to you later.
Good stuff from Cam Inman. But really, man, that was by the hair of their chinny chin chin. It really, really was. It was 17-3, and then the Eagles scored in 65 seconds. Yeah. And there were a lot of plays that could have absolutely changed everything about that game.
And to your point, without a couple Eagle penalties, I'm not sure if we're talking about 290-plus yard drives.
Not at all.
And with the exception of that one Debo catch and run, none of the plays on either of those drives went more than like 8 or 9 yards for the most part. So it's weird. And Lucas said in my ear a very stupid thing ultimately, but it kind of fits the situation.
Wait. Run that sentence by me again.
With regards to Jimmy Garoppolo, Lucas said a very, on its surface, dumb thing in my ear, but I think it's applicable. And when it comes to Garoppolo, Cam was like, well, he's good enough. They're wins. It's 2-0. But is good enough good enough? And when is it not? Because after 2 weeks, I can't help but think if you get this exact performance from Garoppolo, which is to say, no turnovers, no disaster plays, but just deeply underwhelming and the lowest air yards in the entire NFL. Can you be a legitimate contender? I lean no.
I would lean in that direction as well. Eventually, someone's going to put the bill on the table. I don't know if Jimmy can pay it.
Like, are you telling me that the Seattle Seahawks, who, let's see, so far have scored 29 points per game, or the Arizona Cardinals, who I think are actually ahead of that pace, that your defense is just going to shut them down to the degree that you don't need an explosive offense of your own? I don't know. Yeah, the Cardinals are averaging 36 a game through two games, and that's not the end of the season. Like, they may not average that all year, but there's two high-powered offenses in your division. And that's without mentioning the newly supercharged Rams, right? So I think you're going to need offense to win. I think you're going to need more offense than you've gotten from the quarterback. And more importantly, you're going to at least need the threat of being able to go downfield.
And what Cam said about, like, well, hey, Drew Brees, you know, he had all that success. At the end of his career, he did have success with an incredibly short, well-timed, timing-is-everything passing game. And the reason why Sean Payton installed that is because his arm had turned into a rag.
And also, Drew Brees is arguably the most accurate short passing quarterback of all time.
Ever.
Jimmy Garoppolo is not that.
No.
Let me suggest then that the conclusions that people want to extend out from the first two games aren't there to be drawn yet. And because I think that you're going to see a more dynamic offense when they play Arizona or when they play the Rams, because necessity is the mother of invention.
So Milton Burrow. This is the Milton Burrow playbook. Kyle's only pulling out enough to win, and he doesn't want to show you his Kittle right now.
No.
He doesn't want to show you his Ayuk.
I don't know. First of all. Secondly, I don't know if he's thought about the philosophy that he wants to instill for the entire year yet, because I wonder with the injuries that they've had so far, is that he's not just trying to get by, and that, you know, that we keep waiting for him to say, this is the 49ers of the future. And maybe he's not there yet. Maybe he's just going, the 49ers of the future are Sunday to Sunday. I will use Lance in a game when I need to use him, or I will start targeting Kittle aggressively in games where I need to do that. But I don't think he's drawing, I don't think he's looking at these game films and saying, boy, I'm sure glad we're avoiding that guy. I think sometimes Occam's razor's in play here, which is the game presented itself the way it presented itself. And that it's not necessarily the way Sunday's game will present itself or the Cardinal game will present itself or anything else.
We're going to jump into some of what Kyle said post-game yesterday. We are going to jump into a few things that he said on a conference call today. And the texter says, you need to give Philadelphia credit because that defense is a lot better. There is no doubt we are giving Philadelphia credit. That thing was a trench battle both ways. That was not built to ever be a beauty pageant winner. But it was by the hair of their chinny chin chin that the Niners really won that game with. And I think we all know that it was probably, it would have been a lot easier and more comfortable to win with maybe, I don't know, we're going to throw this past 10 yards every now and then. Not every play. I'm not saying you got to go full on Mike Martz, greatest show on turf. But there was a screen game, and then there was the screen game, and then there was the screen game, and then there was the screen game, and now you're Matt Nagy, who needs to be fired immediately, and the Bears need to be stopped. So, boy, that game, that could be an ugly game coming up when the Bears get out here. Buddy. Anyway, let's take a real quick
You'll
break.
Be there.
We do know that we're coming back with open lines to talk 49ers football with. We are going to talk about the Giants, a little out-of-town scoreboard watching, and nobody's going out of town right now because both teams are dark. That's the Giants and the Dodgers. We will let you know what's going on with the A's, and before it's all said and done, Michael Irvin, the Hall of Famer and playmaker, join us today. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, full-service banking, no compromises.
Demon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Sometimes you just got to survive an afternoon of football. The Niners survived an afternoon of football. The Eagles are very good up front, both ways. That's a good offensive line. That's a good defensive line. You can see that Jalen Hurts has some sizzle to him as a young quarterback. I told you that Rager and Mr. Heisman were lightning, and they were. They are. I tell you, though, I want to get back to just for a minute D'Amador Lenore.
Yeah.
Because that kid has, you know, saying Ted Lasso, be a goldfish. Be a goldfish. Have the shortest memory on earth. He got burn unit toasted on a 91-yard play that would have been on every single highlight reel had they actually scored there. Or he did. Once Rager had that ball, he was in, I'm going to sprint away from all of you. He's got, I'm sprinting away from you speed. And Lenore caught up to him. So he's got, now Ward also came over and helped out with the tackle for sure. But he's got speed. He stuck with that play. The only time he looked like he gave up on a play was another Rager touchdown that wasn't when he was called for illegal touching. Lenore knew he went out of bounds. Complete his awareness, his short-term memory, some of the plays he makes out there, that kid's a corner. I know we're worried about this team's secondary. You don't need to worry about one side as long as I think that kid's healthy.
And I'll tell you what, if Emmanuel Moseley, who was, what, doubtful going into the game and then didn't play, if he's back next week and your top three outside corners are Lenore, Norman, and Moseley, I feel pretty good about that. Yeah, yeah. Not great, but pretty good.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's good enough.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still going to be the weakest unit on that side of the ball, but you need it just to be passable for the moment.
And look, Ward and Tart have played their butts off through 2 weeks. Those guys look like the veteran leaders of the secondary. Jimmy Ward saved a touchdown on that Jalen Hurts scramble.
Yes, he certainly did. Kyle Shanahan talked about how Ward and Tart played a great center field.
From what I saw, he was great. I mean, him and Tart deep. I mean, they took some shots on both of those guys. I know they took them on the corners, too. They made some great plays down the field against some very fast and skilled receivers. When that ball is that high and that far, usually the receivers got some better ball skills than the safeties, but I thought our guys didn't panic. They had the speed to get that back there and not get the PI and saved us on a number of plays.
Saved them on a number of plays, and what really probably saved the 49ers, and more than one player is talking about what it meant up to be 7-3 at halftime. Being up 7-3 at halftime is clear indication that things did not go tremendously well, but they were losing that football game as many ways as you can lose a football game, with the Eagles helping keeping the score nice and close because they ran the ridiculous Philly special. They had the field goal blocked. There was DJ Jones made one of the single biggest plays of the game. His tackle on third and short that went into the now Kinlaw blocked the field goal. That tackle could have been the difference in the game. And they did a great job playing 29 lousy minutes and in the last minute taking a lead. Kyle Shanahan talked about being up 7-3 at half. It mattered.
Fortunately, our defense held tight. And, you know, when they give up a big go route, that's going to give them about a 96-yard drive. That feeling gets going like, oh, my gosh, what's happening? But you just keep playing. It's one play at a time, and I thought everyone did that. And when you do that and you do it the right way and you don't turn it over, you look at the scoreboard, and it's not how it feels. And I think that's because of, you know, the character of the guys and how hard they did and that they didn't let anything affect them.
Alex Mack talked about being up at halftime.
I think every time you go in the locker room at halftime, you have to know that there's a lot of game left and you can't be comfortable. So, I mean, definitely great job of responding and getting points at the 2 minute at the end of the half. It's something we work on a lot, but you have to never let up. And I think it's one of the things we learned from the Detroit game that doesn't matter what the score is, you have to keep the pedal on.
George Kittle talked about being up at halftime.
We definitely needed to score on that 2 minute drive. I mean, we had to do something because we were pretty stagnant in the first half. We got a little, you know, some outside zone starting to go a little bit, and you know, that was helpful. But yeah, I think our offense got a little bit going after that because, like, two plays later, Debo had his long one. And then you cap it off with Juwan catching a touchdown wide open. So, I mean, small, consistent steps in the right direction lead to great results. And that's all we're doing, just small, consistent steps down the field, one at a time. And, you know, then finally one play breaks. And, you know, we weren't shooting ourselves in the foot, you know, too bad. We had a couple negative runs here and there, but overall, we were moving the ball forward, and finally something broke because they played really soft in their coverages, and Debo was able to take one almost to the house. So that was awesome.
And look, he talked about small steps in the right direction lead to good things. Well, it was a day of nothing but small steps pretty much across the board.
Yeah, they it was a very utilitarian win, which is, in the end, they had more points than the other guy. There was not a lot of effervescence to it. It was pretty much oatmeal with a little bit of sugar sprinkled on top. But it was not by any means a bad day for them. I mean, it wasn't everything that, you know, fantasy people want it to be. It was kind of just a hard game on the eyes, but if you're a 49er fan, you should be happier than you should be pissed.
By that definition, can you have a bad day if you win?
Not in this league.
Because that kind of, that to me is, I said this before the season, that's the most interesting thing to me, and I think we're sort of seeing it. What if you're winning, but Jimmy's not playing that well? And I know we're going to debate whether he played well. There's people who are going to say he played well anytime he wins. But if the only way to not have a good game is to lose, then I guess you're saying no matter what the quarterback looks like, he's the quarterback until we lose a few. And that seems like a very dangerous and behind-the-curve way to go about it.
But I'm not sure that they're going to wait to lose a few before they start doing different things. And they may not necessarily be more Lance. They might tweak the offense to fix that part of it that's ailing them. Or if it's the defense that's causing the problem, they'll fix that because nothing stays static in football. So I don't think they're going to be waiting to lose. And I don't think they're going to look at like three bad offensive performances in a row and just say, yeah, we're good with that. Because I don't think that's what it is. But if they're winning and they're not looking good doing it, there will be changes made. They might not be personnel changes in terms of what the depth chart looks like, but they will make a bunch of tweaks here and there because that's another part of the football program. And it's everywhere. It's just you. If you sit back and go, well, we won 7-3. Aren't we proud of ourselves? Well, then you're not doing your job. It's how do you get past the 7-7 part while keeping the 3 part? I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of different ways to shave a cat.
And Kyle Shanahan talked about that in this very soundbite. The game plan you see one week might look completely different the next.
That's what you have to do to be a good football team. Each week is a totally different week and a totally different story in all three phases. And, you know, to have that win that, you know, we were real proud of versus Detroit. You know, I know those last 2 minutes we weren't. To lose a couple guys and go spend the week away down in at the Greenbrier, I was just happy we fought together and come out, and you know, you'd love for this one to be easier, but we found a way to get a really tough win. And going on these back-to-back road trips, you know, I think we've won the last 6 of them, and they're not easy. You know, the guys, you go through some ups and downs and want to get home, but I'm really happy winning both of these two, and we got to make sure that we don't have a let-up coming back, because I think we have done that a little bit in the past. After being on the road twice, you remind the guys we'll get some rest these next 2 days, but can't let up after that.
I guess what I would just kill to know, and of course never will, is, okay, I'll take you at your word on this, even though we know that's not a good idea. What did the game plan look like going into this game? Did it say, basically, we're not even going to take shots downfield because we don't believe we can get that done against the Eagles? And if so, why? Was it because of their defensive line? Because we just talked to Cam, and he said what I thought, which is the Niners' offensive line was really good. So I didn't see, like, oh, the offensive line's breaking down. There's just no time
zero
to let
sacks.
Anything develop. Like, and look, Philly has a good defensive line. They pressure Jimmy here and there, but it's not like he was under assault all day running for his life or something. He had some time, and there were some slow-developing plays where he still only threw the ball 6 yards. So I'm not sure that excuse plays, but maybe the theory going in was just this is not a downfield passing game. And I suppose I can buy that, but it's sort of 2 weeks in a row now with no downfield passing game. And if it keeps looking like that, at a certain point, I'm not going to buy the excuse of, well, that's just not the way we wanted to do it this week.
Let me welcome everybody to your 5 o'clock hour.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
For a tax
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.